Hey, it's Mariners Pod. Welcome back. Thanks for being here once again as the Mariners get ready to take on the Houston Astros for three this weekend. We'll touch on that coming up in just a few minutes. I had promised a conversation on defense with one of our favorites, Mark Simon. That's going to happen at the end of this podcast. Also, Rick Riz chats with Kyle Lewis, who returned the last couple of games. So that is great news. So we'll hear from Kyle Lewis. In the meantime, Mariners will try and turn things around, and they'll try and do it against the Houston Astros. Easier said than done. Both teams with an off day yesterday. The Astros sit in first place in the AL West. The Angels right on their heels, but the Astros in first, and they've played great baseball this year. 29-16 overall. They've won a couple in a row. Plus 47 run differential. That's second best in the American League behind the Yankees, who are at a remarkable plus 73, which is pretty ridiculous. And plus 47 is third in baseball. The Dodgers are plus 114, if you can believe it. So the Astros continue to do it, 29-16. Angels, by the way, they've dropped two in a row. They're at 27-19. And the Mariners have work to do after the A's took two of three against the M's. Mariners in last place in the West entering this series. And it does not start in a very easy fashion. Justin Verlander will take the ball. He's been excellent. A 1.22 ERA so far this season. He's just been dynamite for the Astros. Chris Flexen will go tonight, 6:40 first pitch. Saturday, 7:10, Logan Gilbert, Jose Urquidy for the Astros, and Gonzalez against Garcia coming up on Sunday as Marco gets the ball at 1:10 first pitch. And then a long road trip again as the Mariners will hit the road. Baltimore, Texas, and then Houston again. So a lot of Houston in this stretch. As the Mariners will look to get things cooking and try and shake off what has been a tough month of May. Well, as I mentioned, some of the good news from this month, Kyle Lewis has returned to the lineup. It's been great to see him the last couple of ball games, and Rick Riz had a chance to catch up with Kyle right before his first ball game.
Great to see Kyle Lewis back in uniform after the rehab down at AAA Tacoma. It's been quite a journey. Kyle, number one, how does it feel to get back and get ready to make your 2022 debut, and how's the knee?
Man, I'm definitely excited, man. It's been a long time. Been a long journey, you know, a lot of different things, you know, ups and downs and dark times, you know, bright moments. And so I'm just grateful for everyone who helped, honestly, you know, assisted in that process as well. But, you know, the process isn't done. So for me, it's exciting to be out here, be able to start this new part of the journey as well. But, you know, we just take it day by day, as always, you know.
You started your journey down at AAA Tacoma this year, and your first at bat, you hit a long home run. What was that like? And you had a big smile on your face then, and you got a big smile on your face right now.
Yeah, that was exciting, man. That was exciting, you know, get to compete, you know, first real game in a long time. And first at bat homer is something, you know, storybook thing. So it's just cool. All those moments, man, you got to try to enjoy them while they can, because they come and go, you know. And so that was definitely special.
Kyle, you have had an incredible journey ever since you signed with this ball club. The injury with Everett, where you really tore up that knee in 2016. American League Rookie of the Year in 2020. Last year, again, hurt May 31st, almost a year ago to the day. You said the dark times. How in the world did you get through those moments, because there's been so many bright spots in between?
You know, I would say, man, in those type of things, it's a big perspective shift. And then I think over time, you know, you just, with so much time of being away, you just really learn how to kind of prioritize the totality of your life, you know, different areas of life, trying to speak to my family and, you know, try to cultivate different relationships that you may not have the opportunity to. So, you know, I would say those kind of things started to help me out a lot. And then, honestly, just being back around the teammates and being around the guys really gave me that momentum towards the end, you know, that rehab process. And so it's just exciting to be around, be in a locker room, and that environment kind of gives you energy.
Anybody special reach out to you over the past year or so?
Yeah, too many to name, man. You know, everybody, you know, try to show some support, man. I really appreciate, you know, truly everybody. But, you know, so many guys from all different walks of life. So everybody, man, I'm just grateful.
You're going to be DHing for a while. When do you think you might be able to get out there in the outfield? Because when we see in the outfield, there's so much ability out there. But right now, DH.
Yeah, just DHing for right now. Trying to build up as well and see where that ends up. But, yeah, definitely just as far as the plan moving forward, we're just going to DH, just going to try to help the team the best way I can right now. And building up on the side and see where that ends up. It's hard to call, hard to say. You know, these kind of things are so unpredictable. As we've seen up to this point. So it's kind of hard for me to say, but just going to DH for right now and give my best, do what I can.
Sounds like a great plan. As we tape this interview right now, Kyle, looking out on the field, there's the best DH in the history of the game of baseball out there, and Edgar Martinez. Any tips from Edgar about DHing first game back?
I got to catch him. You know, we just were able to say hello, so I'll catch him when we go back inside.
There you go. At one point during the rehab over the past few weeks down at Tacoma, did you feel, okay, now I'm ready? And do you remember that moment?
I would say early last week I really started to feel like it felt a lot better as far as moving around, as far as having a decent routine with how I'm going to prepare in between at-bats and everything. It started to clean up, I would say, early last week.
Yeah. There's been so many high points looking at your very young career. Let's go back to 2019 real quick. You make your Major League debut against the Cincinnati Reds, first game against Trevor Bauer. Your first hit in the big leagues is a home run. What do you remember about your debut?
Oh, man, just the thing I remember about the debut is I felt like everything was going so fast. Yeah. And so I just tried to keep it as simple as possible, try to, like, swing as hard as I could, man, you know. You know, because at that time, I didn't know what to expect from anything. You know, it felt like there was so many people. You could hear the cameras flashing while you're swinging and all that. So it was such a unique experience at that time. So I just remember that, man, like being so kind of like almost overwhelmed in a way. But it's cool. It's cool to think back on it.
Then you hit a home run your next game. As a matter of fact, you set a major league record for home runs in 6 of your first 10 games. What were you thinking after the first week plus in the big leagues?
Just on clouds. You know, my family was there. Everybody was on clouds. Honestly, I feel like we would go home after the game and just stare at each other, like, just unbelievable type. So that was cool, man. It was definitely a learning experience to get out the gates hot, have the feel of a lot of the, I would say, buzz and learning how to go into the clubhouse and do these kind of things. So that was something that was cool, man, just a little bit of success. You know, really give you a lot of confidence moving forward, I would say.
And then in 2020, you played the entire season. It was a shortened season of 60 games. You played 58 games, and you were named the American League Rookie of the Year. What did that mean to you personally?
Man, that was really cool for me personally. I felt at that time that, you know, having had went through so much minor league, I would say, as far as missing games and things, to even in a shortened year, just to be able to have that consistency of playing all 2019 and all 2020 and then getting the award at the end. It's just special for me just to finally be able to let my talent show a little bit. I was kind of waiting on that opportunity. And so that I remember at that time, that was something that I really was proud of, was just being able to actually show my talent, you know, be able to actually make some adjustments. And so I was really happy with that.
You know you're back when you can go out there and be Kyle Lewis and not even have to think about what's happened over the past 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I would say that'll be a moment that'll come, you know, getting back into the game, getting the speed of the game, getting my feet in the dirt, you know, getting on base. And so we're just checking off those little boxes and taking them as they come.
What do you think is going to go through your mind your first at-bat tonight? You step in that batter's box. You got your feet in the dirt. You're looking out at James Caprellian, first game back in almost a year. What do you think is going to go through your mind? Baseball as usual?
Yeah, I'm hoping as usual. You know, I think for me right now, the mission's not complete, so I'm trying to step right in and help. You know, I'm here to pick up where we left off and help this team get some wins, man, get us going and, you know, just do what I can. You know, I know that I'm not expected to come in and, you know, be extravagantly, you know, doing anything, you know, above and beyond. Just trying to be myself and help. And so I'm hoping when I get in that box, it's just like riding a bike.
Just be like Kyle Lewis and do your thing out there. I tell you what, young man, it's so great to see you back. Good luck tonight. Good luck the rest of the way. And for many years in the big leagues, buddy.
Yes, sir. Thank you, man. Thank you.
And one of our absolute favorites, we talk some defense with Mark Simon.
we didn't know what to expect coming into the season, especially with kind of the outfield defense with the Mariners. We have not seen Julio there very much. What's kind of your view of what you've seen from the Mariners defense so far, specifically the outfield defense?
So I think the theme of this would just be a kind of a so far so good, or so far, hey, not too bad kind of aspect to things. In terms of things like a defensive run saved, or just in terms of turning batted balls into outs, the Mariners are fine, which they weren't necessarily so last year. I think it's too early to make proclamations on things like that. But certainly there's more to feel good about there. And Julio so far in center has looked perfectly good. Like there's no reason that you would feel a cause for concern as you did at various points with Kelnick last year. And there were plenty of batted balls, I guess, that would serve as examples for that. That's a little bit of a long-winded answer. Hopefully it gets to what you were talking about.
No, that's exactly it. And I'm curious, when you look at defense, how long does it take you to establish kind of the level of a defensive player, and how much does that change year to year?
So the actual answer on that is probably multiple years. The answer on that, to evaluate the idea of what has happened in a given season, I think you can do that probably within half a season. We've done studies on that in the past. I know where we felt like the first half of a season was predictive of what would happen for that player in the second half of the season. So if you're going to tell me that Kelenic through 60, 70, 80 games is at like plus five in defensive runs saved, I would feel good about the fact that he can be in that range, maybe not five, but maybe two. Two would not be bad. Eight would be great. You know, zero would certainly be acceptable. Again, I think there are large error bars in certain cases on defensive run saves, so you have to be careful. But I think generally that, you know, that half season gives you at least a feel for what has happened, if not necessarily what will happen in the future.
One of the things when you watch a baseball game, it's always tough, just with the eye test, is trying to figure out, hey, how much was it the team putting the player in the right spot? How much was it the player making the play? It's really hard to figure that out, but you and Sports Info Solutions, you do that. So when you look at the Mariners, what do you see?
So in fairness, I've done nothing. My colleagues have done a lot. I just look at numbers and make interpretations and educated guesses off of what I see. So just to give an understanding of things, what we do is, you've probably heard on broadcast TV, it's probably come up in certain instances, out probability, like what's the chance that a ball hit to this spot at this speed is an out. StatCast has one way of doing it. We have our own way of doing it. Takes into account, for a ground ball, say, where the ball was hit, how hard the ball was hit, where did the fielder start as the pitch was coming to the plate? How fast was the runner? Was he a lefty or a righty? Was the runner being held on first base or not? All these things are kind of factored into the out probability calculation. And what we can do is we can look at it, because there are now a lot more cameras on the game. We can look at out probability as if, okay, what's the out probability if the fielder was standing in this spot 5 feet from second base? And then we can look at it from the perspective of what was the out probability for the second baseman, all second basemen playing wherever the heck they were going to play. So you're comparing a situation where you know where the fielder was against a situation where you don't know necessarily where the fielder was. You kind of put them in a generic average spot. And what happens with that is you get a number. Like, for example, we'll use J.P. Crawford as an example. Mm-hmm. There's a 70% chance, if he's 5 feet from second base, there's a 70% chance that he makes the play on the ball up the middle. Mm-hmm. But if we didn't know where J.P. Crawford was standing, and we only knew all the other things, there was a 40% chance of that play being made. So we know that by putting him 5 feet from second base, you just improved your chances of getting an out from 40% to 70%. hopefully everyone can follow that. That's a lot of numbers to digest. But we give the team a credit for doing that. You improved your player's chance of getting it out on that play by moving him closer to where the ball is hit. That allows us to look at the positioning. Then we can look at the skill aspect of it. J.P. Crawford dove for a ball and got to a ball that nobody else was getting. So he took a ball that was a 50% chance of being an out. And with his dive and great play, he turned it into an 80% chance of being an out. So he gets a credit for improving his team's chance of recording an out and then getting the out. You take all of that, every single play over the course of the season, add them all together, subtract out the ones that don't work out, add all the ones that do work out, and you get a number. And then that number gets converted to a value of to say, okay, J.P. Crawford saved 10 runs. J.P. Crawford saved 5 runs. The team saved 5 runs. J.P. Crawford also saved 5 runs. You have all these different combinations. And that's kind of how it works. But we're able to factor in positioning and then ability. And what we found with the Mariners, to get to your question, is we found that the positioning, particularly when they've gone to defensive shifts, they've gotten very good value out of the defensive shifts that they've put to use. They might not always get the out on the play, but they've had good intentions with what they're doing. And thus, I think their defensive numbers probably are a little better than what you might think they would be. So the aggressive shifting philosophy of the Mariners, I think thus far, it's working out for the better.
I am not convinced if there is some sort of ban on the shift next year. Let's just, for the sake of argument, say 2 infielders on the dirt on both sides. I'm not convinced it's going to have a major impact because you can still position guys essentially behind second base. Have you put much thought into what that may look like next year and the impact it may make?
We have thought about it. I don't know that we've necessarily garnered what the impact of it will be, but I think there are teams that are preparing for it. There are plenty of teams that keep 2 guys on each side that move guys around pretty radically. Like, you'll see the third baseman play way off of the third base line, practically play a shortstop spot. Shortstop can be next to second base. The Giants in particular are a team that does this very aggressively, where they'll maneuver, they'll keep the 2-2, but they'll maneuver in all sorts of ways. They actually do that a lot more than they do the 3 guys on one side. So I think it'll take away some things. It'll take away the really hard hit ball to right field that wasn't a hit, that's an out by the guy that's standing in shallow right field because there's not much you can do. Won't take away that the outs on that completely because there'll be some guys that'll still make the play. So I think it'll take away a little of that. I'm not convinced it'll take away a lot up the middle because I think the shortstops for the second baseman are going to be playing pretty close to second base anyway, and there aren't that many balls that are going to get through. So I'm not necessarily sold that it's going to be a hugely impactful thing. Although I guess at this point where we are with batting average, a mildly impactful thing would be quite helpful.
I think you're right about that. And speaking of that, a conversation we've had so often is just, we are in an era of just nastiness on the mound. I mean, the amount of just filth, the pitches we see, it's a ridiculous time. And one of the conversations we love to have with you, what are some of the best pitches in Major League Baseball that we're seeing right now?
I really enjoy this. And this goes back to 2018, I believe it was, when I got to visit your booth and talk in spring training with Rick and Aaron about this very subject because they wanted to know about Felix. Right now, best pitches in baseball. The cool thing is StatCast has the data easily available. So does FanGraphs. The numbers tend to come out pretty much the same or very, very similar. So Kevin Gausman's splitter has been awesome this season. I think people have seen it. There have been articles written about it. This was true when he was with the Giants too. He throws a nasty split where the bottom just completely drops out and you can't hit it. And he's going to get a lot of strikes on it. He gets, when you're looking at nastiness of a pitch, you want strikes and you want outs and you want damage limited. And the guys that can do all 3 of those are your superstar pitchers. Carlos Rodon last year, 4-seamer rated as the most valuable pitch in baseball by the StatCast metrics. Lights out again this year. He's been awesome. He's got the slider that he pairs with it. Verlander's come back. He's right there too. right there with Rodon, still a super effective fastball, even at his age. This was something that I think there was kind of foreshadowing with Logan Gilbert and his four seamer. Like last year, it was really, really good. And the numbers weren't great for him, like the 4.6 ERA. But if you looked at the most dominant pitches metrics, he was right there with the four seamer. So it just made you think that, like, if he could have something else that went with it, that he would be in pretty good shape. And it looks like that's happened for him this season. So those guys, the others are Chad Kuhl's slider is off to a really good start. Rockies pitcher, it's nasty, has kind of a splitter kind of break to it. Mackenzie Gore out of San Diego, the Padres' new rookie, his four-seamer. Kopech's four-seamer, which he amps up there in volume. Joe Musgrove's slider is really good. Brad Keller's slider is really good. Corbin Burns with the Brewers' his cutter. Those are your names so far, I think, that are at the top of the charts.